You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the Boz Knows Show. And I'm your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich, as we come to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, Oregon, where it's blue skies, the sun is shining, and the fair started today. The other fair, the Lane County Fair. Always a good time of the summer. And it's always great when the Lane County Fair, and it's not 100 degrees out. So, good time, good family fun. They've really strived over the last 10 years to make the fair a family-friendly event. And it is really, one of those things where you don't necessarily have to buy a ride bracelet to entertain yourself. There's lots of free stuff available, some shows that are for free along the Midway, plenty of stuff to entertain. And I can spend hours just walking through the animal barns and looking at all the animals and getting to pet a baby goat maybe, and all that good stuff, or pet a poodle. I'm sorry for the interruption in the radio show, but one of my dogs just came and harked on my leg.
heard it here first.
Glad I had a paper towel nearby.
And now the weather.
If you're watching the video, I'm probably tomato shaded right now. How embarrassing.
The following program has been interrupted.
I've got to collect myself now. Completely lost my train of thought.
You want me to start the intro over again?
Excuse me a minute.
And now, Jay Bozovich
and his poodle Piper. This is Piper, who just came and spit her ball and a. She must have drank too much water recently. Let's just put it that way. And I now have a big wet spot on the thigh of my jeans. Okay, let's restart the Boz Knows Show. I'm your host, West Lane County Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. This is the Boz Knows Show. We come to you live at 4 o'clock every Wednesday afternoon, where we talk about all things Lane County, state politics, national politics, the weather, poodles, you name it. It's fair game, because you can control the conversation just by calling 646-721-9887. And just press 1, because that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the conversation. So again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation. We'll try and gather things back up here and reboot the show, because there's lots to talk about. Lane County Fair is going on. We spent our work session today on the board this morning for about 2.5 hours on emergency preparedness and emergency response. Talked a little bit about Snowmageddon and some of the lessons learned from that, as well as thinking about the 2021 world and how we need to be prepared for that, or the Cascadia subduction zone event that is overdue for this area. So we can talk a little bit about emergency preparedness. We can talk about the fair. We can talk about, you know, all the public comment. We had our monthly evening public comment session, which is always pretty interesting. What's kind of interesting to me is everyone asked us to do that, but we hear from the same people that come to our morning weekday public comment sessions are quite often the same people show up at both. So I'm not seeing a huge diversity of folks showing up in the evenings compared to the mornings in some ways. There are a few. And some of the things that came up in public comment, one of which is there's been a kind of a drumbeat trying to get the commissioners to refer something to the ballot that can be done if folks just want to go collect signatures to get it on the ballot. And should the commissioners just refer things at the request of a special interest group, or should they say, you know, if you want to use the ballot to enact law, collect the signatures necessary to do it. So we can talk about that a little bit. But I want to remind folks that we've kind of started putting polls up on our Facebook page, so you can weigh in if you want on various topics. So if you go to the KRBN Internet News Talk Radio Facebook page, which we are now broadcasting live on at the same time with this show, you can see our weekly poll and answer the question there. So just want to remind folks about the weekly poll. And of course, you know, eventually we'll come up with some, you know, what were they thinking here on the Bo's Nose Show? So all sorts of things to talk about this week. And today was also the day that the Homes for Good Board, which is the Board of County Commissioners plus two that are on that board. So it's the commissioners plus two, which the two people are residents in the housing that's provided by Homes for Good are on the board. And had some interesting things come up on that board today, too. So have a fair amount to cover between a nearly 12 hours of board meeting yesterday, because we got started at 9 o'clock and finished up about 7:30 last night. So we covered a lot of ground there, too, from land use issues to approving our solid waste master plan and incorporating that into our rural comprehensive plan. All sorts of activity going on. And of course, you know, we've got Robert Mueller testifying on Capitol Hill, and there's all sorts of national news going on, and there's, you know, state news going on, you know, that we can talk about. So whatever you want to talk about, if you call in here at the Bo's Nose Show at 646-721-9887, just press one, lets us know you want to get in on the conversation. So I want to talk a little bit about emergency preparedness, because we spent a significant amount of time on this. And part of it was, you know, we had Snowmageddon was basically 5 weeks into two commissioners being sworn in who had never served as elected officials. And they kind of got, you know, baptized by fire into the emergency process. So it was kind of important for us to kind of bring them along a little bit. And there's still a lot more for them to do. I was fortunate coming in as a commissioner that I had worked in a utility situation where we had incident command structure training, because we kind of learned through prepping for Y2K and then also the 2002 windstorm event, which folks might remember if they lived around here. We had a big windstorm come up right after our electrical crews had been sent home for the day, like right around 5 o'clock in the evening, that had a huge impact on a lot of Eugene as far as power lines went. And we had to recall all these electric crews, and our response and our ability to answer phones at EWEB really showed a weakness in our emergency response. So we made a huge shift at EWEB at the time. And that's when we brought in the incident command structure system to to eWeb and started training. They started training the employees and all that. So I had a fair exposure to how to respond to an incident and in the incident command structure when I became a commissioner. And in fact, when I was chair of the board in 2015, one of the things I made my year of being chair around was resilience and emergency preparedness. Unfortunately, we have two new board members since then that didn't go through some of the training that I helped provide the board at that time to bring the board along. So they weren't quite aware. So they were getting phone calls from mayors of small towns and people wanting help and didn't know quite how to plug into the incident command system and hand those calls and communications off to that command and control system as smoothly as you know, caused a little bit of stress for them because people were expecting them to be responsive and wasn't really their role to do that necessarily during an emergency. Elected officials really during an emergency, you know, we have a role to communicate factual information back out from the folks that are running the incident command structure, but we're really not responsible for response. That's, you know, because too many cooks, if you know what I mean. We're supposed to be staying up, you know, so much, you know, on the balcony watching the dance floor, not down on the dance floor participating, if you know what I mean. So our role is not so much to be completely involved as to be well informed of what's going on and communicating that back out to constituents and providing factual information and, you know, possibly relaying information back in. But not so much, you know, we should try as much as possible to step out of running and being involved in that incident. So, you know, that's kind of a learning, and that's one of the things we, you know, that was a somewhat of a takeaway from Snowmageddon. But, you know, there were other more obvious things, like we found out during Snowmageddon that our generators for our radio towers in a lot of Wayne County is not covered by cell phone coverage. Well, and we have a radio network that is mostly located up on top of some of the larger hills in the Coast Range and foothills of the Cascades to reach down into the valleys that are really difficult to reach with cell service and to have that seamless radio system that reaches most of the county. Well, those towers, when they lose power, which they did during Snowmageddon, have backup propane generators. Well, those propane generators only have a tank that lasts about 72 hours, and some of those towers are out of service for a lot longer than that. And we also found out that, you know, during Snowmageddon, the top of some of those hills had as much as 6 feet of snow on them. And when we got up there, finally were able to reach them with snowcats, we had to literally dig down it through 6 feet of snow to find the propane tanks to change them out to get the generators back up and running to keep our radio system running. So, you know, one of the learnings of that Snowmageddon was we need longer fuel storage system, you know, larger fuel storage systems to provide a longer window of when we need to reach those radio towers. They need to be basically independently operable for, you know, a lot longer than 72 hours. Maybe 2 weeks even, you know, in a big emergency where we don't have to, you know, that's one less thing that we have to worry about is shuttling fuel back and forth up to the top of a mountain. So just, you know, some of the things we learned, you know, one of the things that became really obvious was how easy it is to isolate a community in Lane County just by having trees fall down across the highway. Let alone having bridges fall down during a subduction zone earthquake. So, and just how quickly a small community can run out of things like water, ability to generate heat, food, and, you know, things like medicine, baby and feminine hygiene supplies, you know, folks in Oak Ridge found out very quickly during Snowmageddon just how quickly some of that stuff disappears from store shelves and gets used up. So it becomes more and more important for us to really start thinking about where emergency response should start from, and the fact that if you're waiting for FEMA or somebody else to come in, they may not be able to get there. You know, Oak Ridge, you know, had to really fend for themselves for a while. So it's really dependent upon us as citizens to prepare for emergencies and to do a better job of being prepared and getting to know your neighbors and, you know, figuring out who's vulnerable and helping them out in these situations. I will say, and I talked about it on the Bo's Nose show after Snowmageddon, I was so impressed with the citizens of Lane County and how much they did do to reach out to neighbors and provide help, and how much of the actual response to that emergency was neighbor responding to neighbor, not government responding to constituent. And truly, when it comes down to Cascadia, that's where it's going to, you know, really happen, because, you know, it, with bridges down, electrical systems completely decimated and probably not going to be back up for a month and all that stuff, it's going to be neighbors helping neighbors that's going to be the most important response. So the question is are you ready to be that first responder? You know, and if you started building up your supplies and working on your emergency response kit, your to-go bag, are you going to be part of the problem that needs responding to, or are you going to be part of the help that's providing the response? And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to go out and buy 2 months worth of food next week. You can build up these emergency supply kits over time, and there are places you can find lists and all that stuff. One of the places you can go is preparelane.org to look for information. Again, that's preparelane.org. And that's a coordination of a bunch of nonprofit groups that are doing emergency preparedness. And they provide a lot of great information on that site and links on that site to, you know, shopping things that you can shop for on a weekly basis and over a year build up all these supplies where it really doesn't hurt your budget badly. Something just as simple as purchasing a, you know, wind up, you know, those hand crank radios, because, you know, the folks out in isolated areas, cell service and power go down immediately. Almost your cell phones run out of power. The only way you're going to know about what's, you know, happening in the world is to crank up one of those AM radios and be listening to the emergency broadcast information and news that's coming out of the counties. So, you know, having that connection to the outside world, so, you know, that you can kind of know, okay, I really should be thinking about hiking my way out of here because they're not going to be here for 3 weeks, or I, you know, I can stay put because they're supposed to have the road open tomorrow. Yeah. Making those sort of decisions, you know, would be useful to have information, and a radio can be that critical link. So just, you know, thinking about that self-preparedness is so important. And it's going to, you know, and thinking about your own continuity beyond an emergency. Are you living paycheck to paycheck? Is your employer going to be there after Cascadia, or, you know, in an emergency? Are you going to be without a paycheck for a while? Does that mean you ought to be putting some money away every week until you have 2 weeks of cash put away? You know, I know it sounds, you know, everyone talks about putting aside money, but, you know, when you really think about it, is how are you going to get past an emergency? Is it accessible to you? You know, are you going to be able to get to a bank or even utilize electronic banking during an emergency? So do you need to actually have some cash available in your home? Is it stored in a safe place? Is it stored where you can get to it quickly and put it in a to-go bag? Is it, you know, part of your to-go kit? You know, all those things, have you thought through some of these things of when an emergency happens. You know, what was interesting is I'm kind of on the prepper side. You know, I've done a lot of this stuff. I've got a lot of non-perishable foods. I've got secondary heat source in my house. I've actually installed a whole home generator and buried a propane tank in my front yard that can run it for almost a month if I use it sparingly, which allows me to get drinking water because I'm on a well out here. As if I have electricity, I have drinking water. So, and because I'm on septic, I still have sewage. You know, so I can be pretty self-sufficient here for a while. What I didn't think about during Snowmageddon was I just happened to be on county business in Washington, D.C. when it happened. And my wife just happened to be out of town with her business. And we had crossover in our trips. And during the weekend that Snowmageddon started, we were both gone and had a house sitter. Now, our house sitter on Monday had to go to work. And we were expecting our employees that for Elizabeth's business, which is here at our, you know, on site here at our house, we're going to pick up kind of taking care of our pets during the day. Well, they couldn't get here. The employee, our house sitter, who happened to have a four-wheel drive truck and was apprenticing as an electrician, had to go to work because folks needed electricians to come and repair their part of their services that broke off during Snowmageddon before they could get hooked back up to the electrical system. So he was in high demand. So here we were in Denver and Washington, D.C., trying to figure out how we were going to get our pets taken care of. We knew our power had gone out, so our generator was kicked on. And one of the things about our generator is, yes, it runs our whole house, provided you turn off the heat pump and the hot tub and a few other large draws. Yeah. So I had to literally get a hold of one of my neighbors and walk them through coming over to my house and turning certain circuit breakers off, getting a fire going in the fireplace so the pipes didn't freeze and all that stuff. You know, fortunately, you know, my neighbor was nice enough to do all that. They also benefited too because their power was out and their well's down, so they didn't have any water. So they got drinking water from us and helped a couple other neighbors get drinking water from our house because the generator was running our well. So we became the drinking water, you know, in exchange for helping us out. They got drinking water. But, you know, you never think about, you know, what happens when that emergency happens when you're not at home. You know, everyone's kind of prepared for being at home when the emergency happens, but you know, taking care of other people sometimes might be you're in some place completely foreign to you when that emergency happens, and it could be you're the one that needs help from local residents. So be kind to folks during emergencies that get stuck in your area. Whether you're on an Amtrak train in Oak Ridge or you're a bus full of kids that got stuck in Oak Ridge from out of town, those people found out real quick, you know, how important it is for the local residents to be nice and take care of them. Because, you know, you never know where you're going to be when an emergency happens. Or if you're going to be like I was, where I was clear across the country trying to deal with the issues during emergencies. So hopefully you'll think, you know, while the sun's shining and it's really nice out and we're not having winter storms and, you know, we haven't had a major earthquake and there's no, you know, we've had a really, you know, fairly mild summer so far for wildfire. So you haven't had to think about evacuations, et cetera. Now's the time to be thinking about preparing for an emergency. So I'm hoping that maybe this is just a little reminder for everybody, you know, go to preparelane.org. You know, there's 1,000 places if you just put in Google, home emergency kits, you know, there's 1,000 sites that'll walk you through a checklist and do shopping lists for the next several weeks to slowly build up your supplies. Just try and do one little thing each week.
that makes you a little bit more prepared for an emergency. Do that for a year and you'll be ready. And you'll be ready to be part of the response, not somebody that needs responding to. Which is that, you know, the more people that are prepared to be part of the response, the quicker we'll be able to, you know, recover, because we'll have less people we're trying to respond to in that emergency. So hopefully you can be part of the solution and not part of the problem. So that gets us to some of the other things going on in Lane County. And, you know, we can talk about a few things that are going on. You know, I hope everyone gets to the fair. I kind of got thrown off my train of thought there for a minute about the fair and animals and all that stuff. It's a great event. Looking forward to it. I'll be at the fair tomorrow from 11 to 2 at the Senior Ice Cream Social that the county commissioners host every year, welcoming folks in there. And we don't check IDs at the door. You do not have to be a senior citizen to come in and get, you know, a free scoop of ice cream and a piece of cake from our MLK culinary program. Just stop on in, you know. So, you know, it's a great event. So hope to see folks at the fair tomorrow. But that gets around to some of the other things going on. And, you know, we had an opportunity yesterday to approve our solid waste management plan. And part of the plan really is to try and reduce some of what's going to the landfill, try and change people's habits so they're buying less wasteful things. And, you know, the current board was, you know, all rah-rah, you know, great, we're passing this. I had to remind folks when we actually started work on the master plan, which was 4 years ago. So this didn't happen overnight to get to a point of having a plan ready to approve. It takes a fair amount of work to set it up and go through getting input from stakeholders, from whether it's the folks that haul the trash to the folks that are, you know, producing some of the plastics, to consumer groups and environmental advocates and everybody else that wants to have a little bit of input on how we handle our solid waste. But it's a really good plan. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things we're really looking at is, you know, how do we deal with plastics and recycling recovery in the current age where China stopped taking that kind of waste because we're not generating a clean enough waste stream. And one of the things we're looking at is maybe developing a full sorting facility. One of the big things we're looking at, though, and one of the places that fills our landfill with material that really is actually a raw material versus a waste material, is all the organics that go into our landfill that could actually be used, you know, in a digestion facility to generate methane, natural gas that could generate electricity, you know, so, you know, forming biogas. So trying to divert, in particularly food waste, out of the landfill and some of the organics that could generate gas could do a lot to extend the life of the landfill. And at the same time, you know, provide this, you know, basically a renewable source of energy for our community. And that's really one of the biggest things that's in our solid waste master plan, is to try and start dealing with diversion of organics. Besides this whole issue of trying to do more plastics recycling and all here in Lane County, because, you know, we've actually got a great firm here called PackTech in Lane County. They got a facility out on Irving Road and down in Cottage Grove, and it's a growing company. Problem is they don't have enough recycled plastic available to keep feeding their, you know, their niche in the market is they make these beverage containers and other plastic moldings out of recycled plastic, and that's, you know, they're kind of a green firm in that way. but they need the input, and we're not generating any recycled plastic locally for them as an input, so they're having to go outside of our community and bringing it in here, which kind of seems silly when we're throwing it, then we're burying plastic in our landfill. So we need to kind of close that loop. And that's part of what the board was, you know, in approving that solid waste master plan, is starting the process of getting some of that stuff done. But really, you know, I have to say we've been really successful in Lane County in diverting waste. We have one of the highest waste diversion rate. In fact, we have the highest waste diversion rate in the state of any county at this time, but it's only about 50%. It really ought to be above 60% and even higher. You know, we have to work on that as a community. And that solid waste master plan is just one place we're heading in that direction. But solid waste master plans don't start 1 month and get approved the next. That was a fairly long process and actually started under the previous board of commissioners. In fact, a couple elections back, we started that work and continued, you know, that work as part of our strategic plan, and completed that work yesterday and in the adoption of the solid waste master plan. So just kind of, you know, make people aware that, you know, there's this constant cycle in Lane County in our government of, you know, developing plans and then executing those plans and then updating those plans. And, you know, we've got parks master plans, solid waste master plans. We've got, you know, public health improvement plans, you know, all these various plans that, but they all get tied into our strategic plan, which kind of provides the major guidance that those all feed into. And we update our strategic plan usually every 3 years, and we're going to be starting that update this fall with the new board, which kind of leads me to this whole issue of some of what's been going on with public comment, which it seems that the current board, if the public comment, you know, starts asking us to do something, they sort of want to go there rather than thinking about, you know, what were the main goals and purposes of Lane County government and staying focused on what we're supposed to be doing versus just what some activist group wants us to do today. And being able to kind of say, that's a great idea, but let's put that in, you know, put a bookmark on that. And as we redevelop our strategic plan this fall, let's see where that falls in our priority of goals. Instead of saying, oh, you know what, we're going to jump on that right now. And I've seen consistently since the first of the year, this board is, you know, basically what I call chasing squirrels. And some group comes in and yells, squirrel. And the board jumps over there and goes, squirrel. Like a bunch of, you know, I don't know. Some of the folks have dogs that react to that word that way. You know, we have a couple, we can hardly say that word around without them running to a window and looking and barking, you know. And it's sort of the reaction this board's gotten, you know, when we get public comment, you know, let's go do this. You know, we get somebody that comes in and gives us testimony about we should pass a bond for affordable housing, and now we're going to hold a work session on that. We have a group of people come in about the birth center. Now we're going to hold a work session on that. You know, it just seems like we're being steered completely by chasing squirrels versus following a strategic plan, which is a fairly big change for Lane County. One I'm not too enamored with right now. So hopefully we can get back to following the strategic plan and not chasing squirrels so much. Which leads me to the latest squirrel we're chasing, which is, should we refer ballot measures and the legality around that? And this is particularly around the ballot initiatives that were attempted to revise our charter and amend our charter, which is kind of the county equivalent of a constitutional amendment, because our charters are our county constitution. So there were these charter amendments that were proposed and then got kicked out by the courts because they failed some of the tests to do a charter amendment under state law. Board of Commissioners had nothing to do with that, their rejection. It was purely something done by the courts. But the folks that were the proponents for those charter amendments are now asking the board to help them short circuit the process and place them on the ballot as, instead of charter amendments, as ordinances to amend county code, which is instead of building them into our charter, it would actually just be into our code. So instead of being a constitutional amendment, it's a statutory piece of law, which, relating it to a state versus the county. So that test for separate vote doesn't apply because it's not a quote constitutional / charter amendment. But what they're asking us to do is to help them not have to go through the process of collecting signatures. And the question is, if we do that for them, do we do it for any group that comes in and asks us just to refer stuff because they don't want to collect signatures? But because of that, we're going to have a work session about whether or not we can legally refer those, because the secondary issue is both of these initiatives that they want to have referred as ordinances dealt with subjects that state law preempts counties from regulating. So they violate state law, which gets the board into a situation of, if we take board action to refer them, we know that those violate state law, are we taking a positive action that violates state law and then thus making our, and knowingly doing so, thus making, elected officials have a lot of immunity over the actions they take unless they take an action knowingly that violates the law and acts outside of our powers knowingly as commissioners. Well, basically referring these ballot measures is the definition of doing something knowingly that violates the law and might make us personally liable for, all sorts of impacts to anyone that feels they were damaged by that decision. So, we're going to have this work session around this, once again, kind of chasing squirrels, because one activist group is asking us to do it. But we did release, we waived our attorney-client privilege yesterday, and we released a memo from our county council to the board that covers why county council feels we would end up being personally liable if we refer these ballot measures, because they do violate state law. And we know that up front, and therefore, we would be placing ourselves in a position where if we voted to put them on the ballot and then say some group that didn't like them there had to spend a lot of money in an election against them, eventually maybe defeated them, but they spent $1 million running a campaign against them, they might come after the board to pay back that $1 million and maybe even their legal fees and suing the board for coming back after that $1 million. So you can kind of see I might be a little reluctant to be personally liable for my share of $1 million or something like that. So, I don't know why we have to have a work session around that when we have pretty clear guidance from legal counsel that says we'd be personally liable. And I'm pretty sure my fellow commissioners don't want to make themselves personally liable for, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of cost. So, but we're chasing squirrels in the board this year. And I guess we'll have to sit through chasing squirrels a little bit more. You got a squirrel you want me to chase? I don't mind chasing squirrels on the Bo's Nose Show, because that's one of the reasons I have this show, is I'd rather talk about an issue now with you and not take up full staff time or board time. And, you know, maybe something we can just resolve here in a conversation. If you call me at 646-721-9887, just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation. So I have to get into something that's kind of a little bit obscure, but something came up today in our Hones for Good board meeting. Now, Hones for Good is the local housing authority for Lane County as authorized under HUD rules in order to take in funding from the federal government to do everything from Section 8 vouchers to providing some of the subsidized housing projects that we have and using federal income tax credits to build them. So we operate, the County Board of Commissioners, with the addition of these two additional folks, as the local housing authority. We call ourselves Homes for Good, but it's the Lane County Housing Authority, basically, is what it is. And in that role, we try and do a lot of things that help folks out, and particularly help folks that are in subsidized housing grow beyond that and become successful and independent from the system. And there are a lot of really good programs, and one of those programs is a program that helps build up individual savings accounts for the folks that are in our housing, as we do also along with those, helping them build those savings accounts, a financial literacy type course where they kind of learn, you know, balancing checkbooks, setting budgets, and all that good stuff. And part of that program for those individual savings accounts is run through the state of Oregon and is executed by a nonprofit called CASA of Oregon, not to be confused with CASA of Lane County. The court-appointed special advocates is one thing. CASA of Oregon is a completely different organization. And I'm going to real quick make a reference to my laptop here so I can give you the correct, what the acronym stands for, is the Community and Shelter Assistance Corporation. And they're located in Sherwood, you know, Oregon, and they run this individual savings account program for the state. And this, what the state does is they match money put in by the residents so that they build their accounts up quicker. And Hones for Good gets $80,000 of funding through CASA from the state to build those accounts. Well, one of the things CASA requires is that we approve a resolution acknowledging former and current discriminatory practices in Oregon in housing. Sounds kind of simple, you know, and I kind of, you know, it bothers me a little bit that in order to get state funds, we have to pass as a board that's organized under the federal government and the county, a resolution written by an outside organization in order to access state funds. You know, it's kind of one, you have to do this or you don't get the funding. At least that's what I understand now. We're pushing back a little bit on that because the board today basically said, we're not going to take action on this. We directed our Jacob Fox, the executive director of Hones for Good, to go back and talk with CASA of Oregon about this and ask, you know, do we have to pass this to access our funds? Can we amend the resolution? Because the resolution includes some things that are just blatantly misinformation. I'll put it that way just to try and be nice. but it talks about how Oregon has a long history of creating all these race-based policies regarding affordable housing, homeownership, and predatory financial practices, you know, that have been around for hundreds of years. I mean, the resolution actually states that, and part of, you know, resolutions usually have what they call whereas statements, which are supposed to be factual, and therefore, which is an action that you're going to take. You know, and in the whereas, they talk about how Oregon has this long history that goes back hundreds of years. Oregon hasn't been in existence for hundreds of years. So just in that simple statement, it's factually incorrect. So, you know, approving a resolution that acknowledges hundreds of years of discrimination for a state that hasn't been in existence for hundreds of years. You know, we were a territory in, I think it's 1848, and a state in 1859 or something. Yeah, 1859. That's not hundreds of years. You know, we haven't made 200 yet. We haven't gotten to hundreds. So, you know, just there. But, you know, some of the things then that, you know, the next sentence says there's evidence of the impact of cultural institutional racism within the community development field. Now, the community development field really didn't come into existence until the 60s in government. You know, it formally kind of maybe got started maybe a little inkling maybe in the 30s during the Great Depression. But government really didn't get involved in community development until then. So it cites some things that really have, you know, the community development field wasn't even in existence at that time. So it's kind of like, yeah, these things are true, but they're not, you can't lay that on the community development field, like the displacement of Native people from their lands, including the political termination of many tribes. That happened well before 1930. You know, and you know, how do you tie those two sentences together? You know, so it also starts talking about the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Well, that wasn't a state of Oregon action. That was a federal government action under the Roosevelt administration. Why are we citing that in this resolution? You know, so what's interesting is Homes for Good has a really serious effort around equity and inclusion. And we're, you know, really aware of trying to be culturally sensitive, making sure we're not executing any discriminatory practices within the agency, and are striving to do our best. So, you know, we're doing what ultimately this asks us to resolve to do is that we'll work towards reversing and preventing future occurrences by utilizing tools at our disposal, including this, what they call the IDA program, which is the program that CASA runs. But it amazes me that they send this resolution to us and want us to blindly just approve it when it contains blatantly factual errors. And kind of mixes up stuff and tries to you know, lay blame for things, you know, including taking, you know, blame for out-of-state investors causing gentrification. You know, I don't know how, you know, Homes for Good and Oregon or any policymakers in Oregon can control what an out-of-state investor does. You know, so it's you know, it just amazes me. And I think if I hadn't spoke up at the board meeting, this resolution would have passed without even being read seriously. And kind of makes me wonder, would we have been setting ourselves up for a future lawsuit from somebody accusing us of discrimination because we passed a resolution recognizing the continuing discriminatory practices in Oregon, because that's part of the language in this resolution. So, you know, we're going to push back a little on CASA for Oregon. And also, we're going to ask our legal counsel whether we're actually establishing any liability by signing this resolution. But all that over accessing funds from the state to help individuals become independent. You know, the goal of the funding is to help people in this housing and ultimately including people of color and vulnerable communities. It just seems like this silly little requirement they threw in there and then threw a whole bunch of language in there, basically to say things that aren't true and to take blame for things that Oregon wasn't even responsible for. You know, why are we taking blame as Homes for Good for the internment policies of the Roosevelt administration? I just don't get it. So maybe you can help me out there. Give me a call, 646-721-9887. Just press 1. And, you know, I think I'm going to give CASA of Oregon my What Were You Thinking award this week for asking us to sign a resolution that can, in order to access state funds, that contains blatantly incorrect factual information. I mean, what were you thinking, CASA of Oregon? And please don't confuse this with the court-appointed special advocates. It's not that CASA. It's a different CASA that has to do with community and shelter. That's what the C and the S are there. So, and it's a state nonprofit that contracts with the state. So what were you thinking, guys? Did you read your own resolution? Did you proof it? Did you think about what it really says? What were you thinking? Be interesting to see what their answer is. I'll let you know in a future Bo's Nose show if, in fact, they will not release the funds without us approving the resolution as they wrote it. I'm actually going to go through and do some editing and send it to them and say, how about this instead? Because, you know, yes, I will acknowledge Oregon did have a history of housing discrimination, a serious history to housing discrimination. You know, had it written right into state law at one point, you know, the discrimination against Blacks and African Americans was serious here in Oregon. And there's still, you know, individuals and maybe even companies that manage properties that you know, will discriminate. I hope there are few and there are exceptions, but there are some out there, and I've heard stories about it. So it's not that it has stopped completely. So I'm not, you know, the basis of the resolution to acknowledge the past discrimination, the fact that some of it continues, I don't disagree with that. This is about throwing stuff in, throwing the kitchen sink in there and thinking that that's a good thing. You could have written a very short resolution that would have gotten to the point, you know, without having to throw in stuff that's just blatantly false or had nothing to do with Oregon, had everything to do with the Roosevelt administration. So, got 5 minutes left on the Bo's Nose show. Anything you want to talk about at all is fair game. Again, 646-721-987. Just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation. We can talk about emergency preparedness. We can talk about the county fair. We can talk about housing and discrimination, ballot measure referrals, chasing squirrels, you name it. Or I can just rail on the Eugene income tax and how unfair taxation without representation is, which both Robin, my producer, and myself, neither of us live inside the city of Eugene, but we are going to be paying for the city of Eugene's public safety needs and everything else, even though they squander a lot of the money in their budget. We have no control over voting for councilors or the mayor to try and get some folks elected that would take better care of their budget. We get to be taxed to pay for their wasteful spending. When we can't, at least in my case out here in rural Lane County, have difficulty resolving some of the issues we have around being able to fund rural patrol, because the city of Eugene has traditionally voted against amending the metro plan to provide a tool for us to resolve that rural patrol issue and being able to set up a district that would cover rural Lane County and not include cities. That's just my personal rail of the moment. I'm against taxation without representation. It's really sad that I couldn't sign the referral of the tax to the voters, because I'm impacted by it, but because I'm not a city resident, I couldn't even sign a petition to put it on the ballot. That's how unrepresented I am for the city income tax. So, maybe it's time we just pass a serial levy to support rural patrol that includes city residents and see if we can get the city of Eugene residents to be paying for rural patrol, seeing now they're going to be taxing rural residents to pay for city police officers. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I got an idea for a meme.
Okay.
Admiral Akbar, it's a tax.
It's a tax.
Yeah, I don't know, the common thing, like you're saying, like I'm just reading up HB, I'll get it right, 2164, which is also supposed to make it harder if people want to put a tax on the ballot to vote on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like we talked about last week, the emergency clause. It's like you're free to open your wallets and just leave them and don't look at the politician behind the curtain.
We really shouldn't be attacking Kate Brown. We should be attacking the abuse of emergency clause.
Right. Go for the heart of the issue.
Yep. And that's something I think everybody should get behind, because the abuse of the emergency clause, if the legislature ever changes hands and becomes Republican, the Democrats are not going to want, Republicans slapping emergency clauses on bills that they don't like. They're going to want to refer them too.
Oh, but that'll never happen, because, well, at least presidential wise, because we got rid of the Electoral College, or at least, you can't get rid of it, but they're kind of trying to stack the deck.
Yeah.
I think you have the best explanation on how that works.
Yeah. But, the abuse of the emergency clause, and it's something we can put an emergency clause on any ordinance we pass in Lane County, and we only do it in rare occasions. In fact, at one point I pulled it off of a measure that we had in front of us because I didn't think it was necessary. Ordinance came to us and staff had written an emergency clause on there and it wasn't necessary, and I pulled it off because I think it's so abused. An emergency should take some kind of supermajority to declare, and there should be some justification as to why a law has to take immediate effect. And I just can't understand how things like providing driver's license to illegal aliens is some kind of emergency that has to take immediate effect.
Well, one emergency clause that we should put in effect is requiring people to hit that subscribe button to our program.
Yes, we should.
to the end of another Bo's Nose show here. I want to thank everybody for listening, maybe putting up with the craziness right at the beginning of the show. This is student-run radio. As I'm doing this live from my home in downtown Elmira, we do have poodles, and sometimes dogs are dogs and interrupting the beginning of the show. But we got through it. We collected ourselves, put another show in the can. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be back with us next week at 4 o'clock here live from beautiful downtown Elmira for the Bo's Nose Show. Have a great week.